Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Drug abuse has been a persistent problem in the United States since the 1960s. Increasingly, drugs of abuse are the kind prescribed by doctors, so-called opioid analgesics, drugs such as morphine and its relatives like hydrocodone, OxyContin, Dilaudid, and fentanyl. In both Oklahoma and the U.S., drug overdoses have become the leading cause of death due to injury, greater than motor vehicle accidents, and 80% of those overdose deaths are due to opiates. Doctors are caught in a vice between the demand for the profession to better respond to the needs of those with chronic pain and being responsible stewards of prescribing federally controlled substances, medications which are often diverted into a black market that feed an insatiable and growing appetite for such legal drugs. There is an antidote, literally. Naloxone, known as Narcan, is a drug that works to block the effects of opiate drugs at their cellular receptors, so people that have overdosed can be reawakened by having Narcan administered. In a first of its kind for Oklahoma, the Tulsa Police Department is training up its force to be able to administer Narcan intranasally. They inject the liquid into both nostrils, which reverses the oversedating effects of those that have overdosed. Nationally, it's estimated that first responders administering Narcan have saved more than 50,000 lives. This is a first for the Tulsa Police, and the program's champion, Officer Anthony First, who's also a trained paramedic, is here to discuss it with us. Also on hand is Dr. William Yarborough, a professor of medicine and specialist in chronic pain management and addiction at the OU School of Community Medicine, who served on the statewide committee that researched the issue and helped select Tulsa as a pilot site. They are my guests today in Studio Tulsa on Health. Dr. William Yarborough, I'd like to start with you. Tell us about the scope of the problem here with opioid overdose. My understanding is it's very much a growing problem in both in Oklahoma and in the United States.
I think it's probably still growing some. In Oklahoma, I've heard quoted that there's a death a day, or had been a death a day from opiate overdose, maybe or a little less or a little more. Sometimes it's difficult to determine whether some patients died from that or from their disease, but it's high, and a lot of these patients that are dying are not patients. These are people who are abusing the drugs, sometimes young people. And I haven't seen any good statistics on that, but my sense is that there's actually more of the deaths are people who are not the patients themselves, but people who are abusing or misusing prescription opiates or heroin, and more so than the patients nowadays. But there's still some patient issues as well.
So you're essentially talking about patients who have chronic pain who are getting opioids through their doctor or healthcare practitioner, but then it's people who are diverting the drugs or buying them on the street that are the ones who are more often overdosing.
I think that's probably true. I haven't seen it broken down that way yet because it's kind of curious, but I think that probably there's less patient deaths and more abuse deaths than there used to be. I think there's safe ways to prescribe opioids. Even when you're doing it safely, occasionally someone can misuse it or mix other drugs, but I think doctors become a little more educated on that and being a little more careful with the drugs. But the drugs out there on the street, often with what we call opiate-naive patients, for instance, somebody crushes up a couple of OxyContins and snorts them, can be deadly, particularly for those who aren't used to taking opiates. So it's a problem that's beyond just the patients. It's a problem out in the high schools, colleges, communities of people who are abusing these drugs.
Officer Tony, first, I want to bring you into the conversation. So you're part of a new program through the Tulsa Police Department to equip police officers with a drug called Narcan.
Yes, sir.
Tell us what Narcan is.
Narcan is it's an opiate antagonist. Basically what it does, it just cancels out the effect of any opiate drug that's in the body. It does nothing else. It doesn't increase heart rate, doesn't change respiration. It doesn't affect any other drug or alcohol, only opiates. And it does a very good job at canceling out their effects.
So what's a typical scenario in which you as a police officer or one of your colleagues might, in a response situation, might use Narcan?
We, in the course of our job, we do bump into quite a few people who abuse drugs or sometimes suffer from problems that were accidental in nature. But a hypothetical for us, actually, I can give you an instance that occurred recently just 2 weeks ago, our first reversal here in the department. A suspect actually saw officers coming towards him. And before the officer saw him, he swallowed a bunch of pills to try and hide them so that we couldn't recover them as evidence. Apparently, some of those pills were opiates. And as the officers walked up to him, he collapsed and became unresponsive in front of the officers. The officers deployed the Narcan, gave him the dosage that they're issued to give him, and about 2 minutes later, he awoke. They reversed the effects of the opiate pills that he took to hide from us.
Wow. So tell us, how is the drug deployed?
It's the way it's deployed with our officers. Each officer is given what we call Narcan rescue pack. It has two dosages of Narcan. Each dosage is 2 milligrams. And they're also given an atomizer, a nasal atomizer, so that when the Narcan is set up into a small little syringe-like setup, it is sprayed up the nose, much like a nasal spray, much like Afrin, so that half the dosage is given up one side of the nose, up one nostril, the other half is given up the other side. And the officers are told to wait for a couple, 3 minutes, and hopefully they should see some effect, but if they don't, they will give the second dose that they have in the exact same manner as the first.
And so the good part about this, there's no needles involved.
No, no. However, there are some agencies that do give their officers needles. Narcan can also be administered intramuscularly, so their officers are given needles to give shots, just like you would get at the doctor's office.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but most police officers aren't trained. They might be trained in basic first aid, for example, but aren't typically administering medications.
That's correct. In fact, outside of Narcan, I don't know of any drug that's given by any police officers. That the area of giving life-saving medications usually falls to the paramedic and to the fire medic to give that.
Now, it so happens you are a paramedic.
Yes, sir, I am.
But that's unusual, you were telling me, right? You're one in the Tulsa Police Department.
Whether it's good or bad, I suppose it's unique that I'm the only paramedic with Tulsa Police Department. So my job is to help educate other officers in medical topics that would benefit them on the street, including the Narcan program.
So was the Narcan program essentially your initiative to bring into the department and train
actually,
everybody?
No. It came down from Governor Fallon's office. She was able to allocate some funds for Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. From there, they looked at all the counties in Oklahoma and realized that, unfortunately, Tulsa County was probably one of the worst ones in the state for the number of opiate overdose deaths. And based on that, our Chief Chuck Jordan, raised his hand and he said, we will be the pilot agency for this program. And so with his encouragement, he's passed it down to us as the officers, and here we are.
You said it's only been recently installed, the program. And so you've not had a great opportunity to deploy Narcan yet.
That's correct.
But this is something that's been done across the country, hasn't
it? It has. To date, there are over 50,000 people who have been trained in giving Narcan rescue packs like this. Almost 200 agencies, both police and fire, across the country. So this program has actually been around for quite some time, I believe back to 2010. It just recently came here through the efforts of a great many people meeting about it over the last year. And so we're very fortunate to have it now.
And Dr. Yerber, how did you come to learn about the Narcan program?
Well, interestingly enough, I am acquainted with some of the doctors who kind of initiated this in the Boston area. I first met them at a meeting of the addiction medicine group there. I think a guy named Alexander Wally was one of the initiators of this. And I remember them talking about this and never thought much about it. And about a year ago, I got a letter from Terry White, who's the mental health commissioner, who had been tasked with this job of getting this organized from the governor, and I accepted the invitation to be on a committee, and I talked to some of these guys I knew about this and learned more about it and how they had instituted it and so forth. And so being in addiction medicine, that sort of falls within that kind of ballywick, I guess.
So have you had occasion to use Narcan in your clinical practice, or do you see this in hospitalized patients? I know you used to work in an emergency department.
Yeah, I used to be an emergency room doctor. I've used it many times, but that was kind of ancient history. No, I do, though, treat chronic pain patients with opiates sometimes. And there are some of these patients that sometimes get to be on fairly high doses of these medicines. And I've often thought it would be nice to give their husband, wife, caregivers some Narcan, because what happens sometimes even with stable chronic pain patients is for some reason they may have a couple of drinks on a celebratory occasion. Maybe somebody inadvertently or just get started on a sleeping pill, a benzodiazepine pill or something along those lines, another depressant, and they have a bad reaction from that, fall asleep. They find to be sitting in their chair and fall asleep and quit breathing. Nobody's noticed it, and it would be really nice. That doesn't happen a lot, but it'd be nice if people could have Narcan. And the other place where I think this is useful, there's good studies that show that one of the most frequent times for an overdose, particularly from addicts, is after they've been discharged from a treatment center and or after they've been discharged from a week or two in the county jail where they've been without drugs for a month. We've had this happen before. Then they go through treatment for 30 days without drugs, and they go home and they find their stash, and suddenly they're sticking a needle in their arm. And it's too much, because that tolerance to this drug really leaves you very quickly. You know, even with a chronic pain patient that's been off, you can't start them back on the dose they've been on if they've been off of it for 2 or 3 weeks. You have to start over because that tolerance to these drugs goes away, and you go back to your regular dose, it becomes fatal. And that happens with heroin addicts because they get out of treatment. They've been shooting up, I don't know the dosage of heroin since it's illegal, but they've been shooting up a large amount of heroin, and they decide to shoot up a large amount of heroin after they've been off of heroin for 30 days, and they die. Because they're not tolerant to that drug. Now, that tolerance comes back really quickly when you start using it. It doesn't, you know, 2 or 3 doses and you'll kind of, but at the very first, you've lost a lot of that tolerance. And so, bam, you know, you die. And it's a dose that you've been, had been using. And that's very common with heroin addicts and probably with the same with opiates. So people that going home from a treatment center, an opiate addict, again, it'd be a nice to send them home or send their family home. A lot of these people are teenagers, young adults, with some Narcan. And not that that's what you want to happen, it's just that it would save quite a few lives. I mean, we're looking at 300 or 400 deaths in Oklahoma a year from this. If we save 5%, that's 15 lives. 10%, that's 20, you know, 30 lives. I mean, when you start looking at it that way, you're not going to be able to save everybody, but you're going to save quite a few lives with this. And I think that's been the experience in other places. You know, it's like you don't save everybody. You just don't get to them in time or you don't have it. But these are mostly young people, too. And I think that's the thing about this. This isn't a 90-year-old hospice patient. This is often a 21-year-old college student. And so, you know, you're saving a lot of years of life, a lot of humanity. Some of these people are mothers. Some of them are fathers. You know.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guests today are Dr. William Yarbrough, who's a professor of medicine at the OU School of Community Medicine here in Tulsa. He's a specialist in both chronic pain management and the treatment of addiction, and Officer Anthony First from the Tulsa Police Department Special Operations Team. He's a trained paramedic, and they're here telling us about the Narcan program that's new to the Tulsa Police Department as a public health measure because of the growing problem of deaths due to opioid overdose, both, I suppose, intentional and unintentional. Now, before the break, we were talking about the possibility of family members being given Narcan doses. And Dr. Yarbrough, you mentioned the possibility of families taking a loved one out of a rehabilitation facility. And offline, Officer First, you and I were talking about the possibility of being able to prescribe Narcan, physicians being able to prescribe Narcan to family members who aren't the patients. What experiences do either of you have with that? Is that, I guess, first of all, is that justified to, I mean, we think it is, in our code of medical ethics, we typically are not supposed to prescribe medication for people who aren't our patient. But I think in this instance, there's actual Oklahoma statute, right, that says it's okay to prescribe Narcan for, you know, the family member of a loved one.
Yes, sir. The same law that allows responders to now give Narcan, the Good Samaritan law, it's the same category as an AED or as an EpiPen for an allergic reaction.
AED,
automatic external defibrillator. My apologies.
No, it's okay.
But the same law that allows people to use that with very minimal training also allows them to give Narcan, also allows a doctor to prescribe Narcan as a rescue pack without having to see the patient. As an officer, one of the most heartbreaking and frustrating situations for us is when a mom or a dad or a brother or sister will ask us what can they do for their loved one who has a problem. And most of the time, unfortunately, we don't have great answers for them. Just like every other place in the country, we don't have enough beds, we don't have enough outreach programs, we don't have enough facilities and money to handle the problem out there. So most of the time, the answers we give them are not very helpful to them. With this, however, we're actually able to give them a little bit of hope. We can tell them that it may not be a long-term answer, but at least with Narcan in their hands, with the help of their physician, they at least have the ability to stop if their loved one has a really bad day and overdoses accidentally. So it's not the best answer in the world, but it's certainly better than anything we've had before. And in the end, it doesn't really matter what the greater ethics are, if you will. What we face is just face-to-face, eye-to-eye with the mom or the dad asking for help. And they just want to provide help regardless of what the larger amount of statistics would say.
I think this is an important project, too, because it's something I've kind of preached for a long time is agencies working together around the drug problems and stuff. It seems like everybody does their own thing. You know, it's I mentioned in this prior, we got the police, we have the county sheriffs, we have treatment people, we have physicians, we have people in the fire department, and all these people working together to try to solve a problem. And it's interesting, I think that's what we need to do. I think sometimes as physicians, we're often kind of the villains in all this because we're the ones that have the discretion of prescribing narcotics, and so it's, you know, it kind of starts with us. Yet most, it'd be a very, very tiny percentage of physicians who want to be mixed up in anything like this. You know, there are people that need these medications, et cetera, but I think sometimes we're treated as potential perpetrators by various agencies who actually could learn from us. And for instance, I said this before, I've been talking about the heroin problem in Tulsa for 5 years, and yet the narcotics people and stuff would tell me there isn't a heroin problem, and I was seeing it every day in treatment. And eventually he figured out that it was a heroin problem here, but we were seeing it first. Why? It's because people come into treatment, tell you that they tell you what they're doing. You know, a policeman stops them, they're like, well, you know, what do we do with that? So it'd be interesting, you know, if people listen, it was like, you're crazy, you know, we don't have any heroin here. And so I did a TV interview a couple of years ago about PCP, and I said, what are you doing about PCP? He said, well, that's because the police say that's a real problem. I said, well, the police think it's a real problem because when you do PCP, you take your clothes off and walk down the street, and the police get called. Somebody's over here doing heroin, nobody's calling the police, and so the police have to find out about that different ways. And so we need to work together, or if something comes into the community that's going to be damaging, the medical community needs to know about it, the police know about it. But there's really no lines of communication. So I just think that it's important that people work together on these projects and get to know each other, and also so that people can kind of work together. We're all on the same team. We all have different roles, but it's important that I think we work together, and I think this is a good example of that.
Actually, I think that's a really excellent point. Is this sort of a bellwether example of cooperation, say, between the medical community and law enforcement, or are there other examples you guys could think of where there's good cooperation between the two?
Well, interesting enough, before HIPAA came along, and I think there was always privacy laws, we used to sometimes communicate, particularly, I think it's the guy, I can't remember his name now, but that you could talk, say, hey, I got a guy here, and what do you think? And he goes, well, I know that guy, blah, 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 and you can kind of, you know, work through it. Nobody does that anymore, partially because of privacy issues, and probably shouldn't have been technically doing that before, but it's become, so people are kind of afraid to pass on information, you know, even from pharmacists sometimes. It's just like, we've got these some rules out here that kind of keep us from, you know, if somebody is out in the street selling drugs that I'm prescribing, that's not my intention. And if somebody out in the street knows that, I'd like to know that. I can cut that off fairly quickly. And yet, you don't ever get those kinds of communications. And so I don't know whether that's a privacy issue or it's just no one knows how to do that. But I think it is something that could be really important in solving some of these issues. So I think it is. I think it's a way to get people together. I was been pleasantly surprised. I think the Tulsa Police Department has reacted to this in a very positive way. I was there originally, and Chief Jordan was, you know, like a little bit, but, you know, he very quickly saw the utility of this and really got on board, and I'm very impressed with that.
So, Officer, first, we should point out that as a first responder, if the Narcan pack is administered, the Narcan drug, to somebody out on the street, and they are aroused, they wake up from their slumber, from their coma or their unconsciousness, it's highly likely that, in fact, they have abused or overdosed on an opioid. But at that point, your job, the policeman's job, is really to get them to, you know, medical safety, right, to have them evaluated.
That is correct. Narcan is not considered a therapeutic drug. It's a very short-acting emergency drug. At best, you may get 60 to 90 minutes of effect out of it, and that's on a good day. So you may give Narcan to someone. They'll wake up and seem okay, but then eventually the Narcan will wear off. The effects of the opiates will kick back in, and your patient will go back out on you and could likely die again. So if we do administer the Narcan, it is successful and we call it reversing them, bringing them out of a life-saving situation. They must still be evaluated by a higher level of care by a doc because, again, we can only do so much in the streets. We will need a higher level of care to make sure that once we've reversed them, they stay reversed and hopefully get referred to a higher level of care beyond that.
And we talked about Narcan, and I guess another example of a drug that either could be or potentially is administered by policemen in the line of duty would be like an EpiPen?
Correct.
And so that we're talking about epinephrine, which is used for what we call anaphylactic shock, a severe allergy, a life-threatening allergy where someone can't breathe, and that can be administered usually through into the leg muscle.
Correct.
And so this is now sort of an addition to the armamentarium that an officer could carry or have in their squad car.
Well, right now, an officer could carry an EpiPen if he or she were prescribed to do that for their own problem. EpiPens aren't something that are typically in the law enforcement area, mainly because anaphylaxis isn't something that police respond to very often. That's a very fast, life-threatening emergency, and officers oftentimes just don't make it there before ambulances and fire trucks can. And it's also, at least within our department, it's not part of our policy to do that. That's not to say that an officer off duty or whatnot couldn't do what they needed to do if they felt it was appropriate, but at least while we're in uniform, on the clock, if you will. Epinephrine is not part of our capabilities, and to my knowledge, it's not officially a part of any agency's ability.
Okay, so the similarity ends just with a rapidly administered drug, but it's not something that police are typically doing. But you raised another point in terms of paramedics, which of which you are one, but in terms of EMSA, for example, or the fire department, are there folks who are saying, you know, why aren't those agencies leading the way on Narcan? Why is it the police that are doing it? Is it because you're, I mean, are you typically the first ones on the scene when someone is, quote unquote, found down?
Not necessarily. A lot of times when these calls come in, they don't come in as overdoses. They could come in as respiratory difficulties. They could come in as chest pains. So many times the call as it comes into dispatch is not what's actually happening. So EMSA, which is our local EMS responding agency, EMSA and fire may arrive completely without knowledge that was actually an overdose problem. So, by the time they arrive and we are notified, we may not be there for quite some time after they are on scene. At least in Tulsa County, nobody is, I want to say pointing fingers, nobody is worried about why any agency is not doing anything one way or the other. EMSA paramedics and fire paramedics here in Tulsa County have always been capable of administering Narcan. It's been part of the paramedic scope of practice for years.
Oh, so they do the administer
yes,
Narcan?
Yes, the paramedics with the fire department and paramedics aboard the EMSA ambulances, Narcan has been part of their scope of practice for many years. So they are already carrying Narcan.
Okay, so this is just something that you've stretched it to police officers.
This is something that the program itself, via the Good Samaritan Law, has offered out to people who are not paramedics, to just the citizen on the streets.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in today for Rich Fisher. My guest today, Dr. William Yarborough, professor of medicine at the OU School of Community Medicine here in Tulsa. He's a specialist in chronic pain management and treatment of addiction. And Officer Anthony First from the Tulsa Police Department and a trained paramedic. We're talking about the Narcan program, which has recently been instituted in the police department to try to administer the drug Narcan, which is a reversal agent to awaken or reverse the effects of opiate drugs on people who may have intentionally or unintentionally overdosed. And before the break, we were talking about the Good Samaritan Law, and you mentioned that, Officer First, in terms of under what auspice, in a sense, you are able to do this. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Until this law went into effect November 1st, bringing Narcan under the Good Samaritan Law, before that, you had to have a medical license to give Narcan. You had to be working under the supervision of a medical control doctor. For example, here in Tulsa, Dr. Jeff Goodlow is our medical control doctor. So any fire medic or any EMSA medic can give Narcan under the supervision of the doctor, only with enough training, of course. With the Good Samaritan Law going into effect November 1st as it pertains to Narcan, now, as long as you have the minimum amount of training, which is it's very easy to administer this, you don't have to have a medical license anymore. You can do it as a police officer in the streets. You can do it as a private citizen, as a mom and dad in your own home. As long as you're shown how to do it and when to do it, Narcan is a very safe drug. It's extremely difficult to make bad things happen with Narcan, and that's why we give it. It's very hard to mess up, very hard to hurt somebody with.
How did the training and the deployment in the police force go? Did you find reluctant officers who were scared about, you know, a little squeamish perhaps? I mean, it sounds sort of silly, but are there people who thought, whoa, this is medical stuff, I don't want to do this? Or did people kind of jump right in and say, hey, this is great, we can save lives?
Well, we're still in the process of training. We have roughly 400 officers and supervisors in the field. I've been able to train about 100, maybe 120 of them so far. So I have a little ways to go. But they've actually been very receptive of it. It is a new thing. Police officers and firefighters and medics are notorious for not liking new things. So there is a little bit of selling, if you will, to it. But they also understand the loss that families can suffer. They've been on scene just like I have, just like you have. And so when we show them how effective it is, how effective it's been in other places, and certainly seeing a couple of their own officers just a couple of weeks ago save a life with it, very receptive to it and very willing to use it if it's necessary.
Dr. Yarborough, is your sense, having been on the commission that helped get this implemented, that this is something, probably too early to say at this point, but something that will continue or there will be continued funding for?
Well, I think that's a good question. I'm not for sure. I'm not even for sure how some of this, when we roll this out to the public, gets funded. I think there is a commitment from the governor's office on down to specifically address the opiate problem that we have, along with this problem, along with just the addiction problem that we have of getting more dollars into particularly medically assisted treatment. That's kind of a new program to get people back from their addiction and so forth. So I think we have to be careful, though, that this doesn't become the way of the next big craze that comes along and we're off on something else. I know nationally there's a lot of publicity now about some kind of fake ecstasy that's being sold out there on the street, and And so that's becoming the new epidemic. And we have a tendency in our country of this opiate problem's been around for a while. And yet it's sort of in the last year or two, because of some celebrity overdoses and other things, I think it's gotten a lot of attention, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But we have to be careful that it doesn't go the way of, because this is a deadly, what makes opiates so worse in some ways? Opiates are really great things for medical, so if we didn't have them, we'd have a lot of trouble. But opiates stop people from breathing, I might say, in a pleasant way, as opposed to death from drugs like cocaine or ecstasy, which is not a pleasant way to go. So people don't tend to get to that overdose level as often and die from those drugs. It destroys them in other ways, but there doesn't tend to be as many deaths with some of these other drugs. It's a slow death with meth and other drugs. So it's what makes opiates particularly a problem, I think, because people take too much of it and they feel good to the moment that they stop breathing. They don't have convulsions and run crazy and sweat like you might with an amphetamine. So we need to continue these efforts to stop this in any way we can. You know, my daughter died of an overdose and with someone she'd been in treatment with, and I always thought if she'd had some narc in there, she might have lived.
Wow. Officer, first, I understand there are some critics of this program, and I mean, it seems to me I'd be hard pressed to find anything wrong with something that's going to save lives. But there, have you come into contact with any of those that have questioned you in terms of your enthusiasm for this, or on what basis, I guess, do critics say? I mean, is it just the sort of like we have to spend our resources as wisely as possible, or that this won't work, or you know, what are the skeptics saying?
I haven't bumped into them personally. In this county, we've been very receptive to the idea. In reading literature about it from other parts of the country, you will occasionally see reference the idea that if we give Narcan to family members and to first responders, that we are indirectly enabling those who would use opiates, that if somebody who is using opiates knows that other folks have Narcan, they'll be more willing to do what it is that they're doing. Those voices are very minimal in nature. The numbers of people who might argue that are completely overwhelmed by the over 50,000 lives that have been saved by this. So I can't say it's completely an invalid argument, but I have no idea how we would ever track an argument like that. And against the numbers of lives that's been saved with it, it's almost insignificant.
And that's the figure, 50,000
lives. 50,000 lives saved so far.
Across the U.S. That's unbelievable.
This did come up early on at the committee meeting, and it's really even hard to address that addicts sit around and think, well, I got some Narcan here, so I'll just shoot this up. They're looking for a better high. They're not thinking about dying. There may be some people like to play that, but say this enables people. I just don't see how that would ever be an issue.
Well, gentlemen, we're out of time, but this was deeply informative, and I'm very glad to know that the police have this capability and that you're doing your best to train up the entire police force. I'm happy to know about this, because this is a way that it sounds like, you know, people are often dying inadvertently or that don't have to and can maybe get reversed and then, you know, sent to treatment or get some kind of meaningful help to conquer their addiction. That's our show. Our guests today were Dr. William Yarbrough, a professor of medicine at the OU School of Community Medicine here in Tulsa. He's a specialist in chronic pain management and addiction treatment. And Officer Anthony First of the Tulsa Police Department, who is a paramedic and part of their special operations team who's implementing the Narcan program for the Tulsa Police Department, the first in Oklahoma. Thank you both very much, gentlemen.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa on Health is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not represent those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.